Okay, let's pool our knowledge and ignorance or truth on these issues. So, what do you think is the relationship of truth and knowledge?
You know some aspect of truth.
You know some aspect of truth? It's quite complex. There's a lot of this one, isn't there? Yes?
Knowledge is knowing the truth.
Knowledge is knowing the truth. That's true knowledge.
Yeah, I'm saying...
Yeah, okay, good. Yes?
Knowledge is information that you have that you know to be true.
Okay, yes?
You like collect knowledge to know the truth.
You collect knowledge to know the truth.
Yes.
Mm-hmm, yes? Well, we've done that group, yes?
Things that you hold as true come from things that you know, and so your truth is entirely entangled in what your knowledge is.
Your truth,
whether it's objectively true or not.
Whether it's objectively true,
what you perceive as true has to be things you already know.
Has to be.
You can't have something. You can't be like, I know that this is true, because you have to know that it's true, and its knowledge is in that sentence.
That's tricky, isn't it? Yes. Well.
Knowledge is a subset of truth. Something could be true and you won't know it, but it's still true.
No, we got the other.
Knowledge is a subset of truth.
No.
There is truth, but it's true whether you know it or not.
Truth is a
okay.
Truth is that's a what we had.
Truth is a subset of knowledge. Right? Yeah. Okay. Well, you two can fight that out later. Yes?
Well,
that's too complex to. Yep.
Maybe it's a bit.
What do you think? Here?
We're very much trolling.
I said, like, truth kind of comes from a judgment of our knowledge.
Truth comes from our judgment of knowledge.
In a way.
So is truth the subset of knowledge or knowledge the subset of truth? You can join their fight, yes?
Everyone desires their knowledge to be truth.
Everyone desires their knowledge to be truth except a liar. I would have thought. But yes, okay. Oh dear, dear me. How do we go with truth and faith? See, the knowledge one's enough to hold you up for the night, isn't it? How do you go with truth and faith? Yes, what did you think on truth and faith down here?
So faith might be believing something is true.
Faith might be believing something is true.
Yeah, you need to have faith that the thing that you think is true is true.
Yeah, faith to think that the thing is true is true. Mm-hmm. So faith precedes truth. Or does faith precede knowledge?
Well, if something... It depends on what you think.
It depends. Right? That's called... That's another word for faith. Yes?
Faith is based on truth.
Faith is based on truth. Good.
Faith is based on truth.
Sorry?
No, I argued that because, like, people of a different religion would believe that their faith is true, even though as Christians we know that what they're believing is actually true. So therefore, faith can't always be true.
Faith can't always be true, but...
It got really confused.
Yeah, got confused, yes.
But you can also know something is true without having faith in it. So, like, the demons in the New Testament know that Jesus is Lord and don't have faith in him.
Ah... Bringing the Bible into this discussion, are we? Yeah, yeah.
The pistis, i.e. faith, is trust and trustworthiness. So it's like loyalty to. So you can have faith in the truth or faith outside the truth.
Faith is independent of truth. Faith is a faith thing. Truth is a truth thing. You can have it or not, doesn't matter.
Well, it doesn't.
It might matter, but yes, yeah. It doesn't change the nature of faith or truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. All we've done is establish there's considerable confusion on these ones, aren't there? How about the last one? Very simple, the last one. What is the opposite of truth?
Not truth.
Not truth. Yes. I actually don't agree with that, but never mind. We'll find out in due time. You were the one who said trust earlier, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah, well, there's just inconsistency. Okay.
False.
False.
I said cap.
Hey! Bro, you capping.
Okay, I'm too old for that one.
It would be false. I have falsehood.
False, falsehood?
Delusion.
Delusion.
Anti-truth.
Anti-truth.
Depends on the truth.
Depends on the truth.
Lies.
Lies. Oh, well, we're getting there eventually. Yes. I didn't give you the complete definition from the dictionary, so let me give you the other.
You're a liar.
No.
Is that a white lie?
I'm just inadequate. I didn't tell you it was the full definition. I said, here's the definition.
Is that lie by omission?
And there is the last part of it, which actually doesn't fit with the rest of it. Loyalty. Loyal, faithful. He's a true friend. Huh? That's a different feel to in accordance with fact and reality. You can connect it. He's a true friend in fact, but it's actually got to do with something slightly different, hasn't it? That you conform to a standard you're faithful to. That is, truth can be a relational activity. So therefore, the opposite of the relational activity is telling lies. That's the opposite of that, isn't it? Whereas truth can be a factual thing to which we have problems now because untruth and lack of knowledge and lack of certainty about, and we don't know what the opposite of the truth is at this point because the opposite of the truth is what's not true, but we don't know what not true is because we don't know what true is. So we are left with one knowledge rather than with truth itself. Well, let me tell you the truth. Are you ready?
Yeah.
In this building, the ladies' toilets are on the top floor and the men's toilets are down the stairs straight underneath them. And well, not straight under, but downstairs underneath the stairs there. So when we come to the break in a moment or two, if you want to know where you're going, there they are. In the meantime, trajectory's coming and you need to be signing up for it. Here's a letter I got back from someone today who said it was very formative, encouraging weekend for me as I began to think about where God might be planning to use me. I hope that you know how much God has used these weekends in and my and many others' life. Yes, trajectory is not like any other conference. It really is aiming to be looking at where you are going in life, where God is going in life, where God is taking you in life. It's a planning conference, a planning in which you do the planning, but you do the planning under the word of God and in fellowship with others. It's a different kind of conference. So in the past we've had them as fairly small conferences. That's about the size we've run them. But of course COVID's wrecked everything. We cancelled about four of them last year because of different COVID regulations. But now that we're coming back into the world again, we've just planned one for this year because we thought it was easier to cancel one than cancel, you know, several of them. But we also booked much bigger site and we're reconstructing how we do it so that we can achieve the goals that we were achieving in the small ones. Next year, well, we don't know what we're doing next year. That's, after all, the end of trajectory is one of the questions as to whether this is the end of trajectory. What is the end of trajectory? Don't miss out. We're coming now to... we're in the right month now, aren't we? It's August 26 to 8, and this is August already, in case you didn't notice. So sign up, all you got, well, you know how to do cue cards better than I do, etc. In fact, I was shown how to do something on my phone today, which constant, you know, when you're old, you don't know any of these things, you just got to get shown what to do. So trajectory is the main thing we want to be talking, because there's no forum next week, won't be until the 8th of September, so the next thing that we've got on is this. We'd love you to be there. To share with each other, a lot of sharing with each other over the course of the weekend as we ponder for ourselves what we're doing in the light of what God is doing. It's a different kind of weekend.
2.5 weeks left to register.
2.5 weeks left to register, And we still have places. It's not like it's chock-a-block full. We're about half full now, aren't we? More than half full. So do make sure you get in, and we want you to. If you've got financial problems about coming, contact Wendy, and she'll be able to help you, because we've got friends like that person who just wrote that other comment who would be very happy to contribute for someone else to go if they need to go and can't afford to go. All right? Because it is one of those life-changing things for many people. Well, we'll have a quick 3-minute break. 20 past, I'm going to ask for questions now, because we haven't really yet opened the Bible, and there's a lot of Bible yet to come. So, and so here you go on these. Move through them quickly. Is it ever right to offend people? Does freedom of speech equal the right to offend? Should we have trigger alerts? What's the difference between blasphemy laws and cancel culture? What's the problem with having a compulsory educational curriculum? Why don't we do it by groups? How about the group over there and at the back? Is it ever right to offend people? These two groups here go for, does freedom of speech equal the right to offend? These two groups in the middle here go for, what's the difference between blasphemy laws and cancel culture? And these three groups, because these two groups can't agree with each other at all, go with the subject of, what's the problem with compulsory educational curriculum? You ready? Go. Okay, is it ever right to offend people?
Yes.
You think so? You would, wouldn't you? Yes? Is it ever right to offend people?
Yes.
When?
When they need to be challenged.
When they need to be challenged. When did you think?
Well, in the context of, if you're sharing the gospel with someone, they'd be pretty offended to hear if they're a sinner.
Yeah.
It's wrong to
tell them.
To tell them.
Okay, does freedom of speech mean the right to offend?
Yep.
Yes.
Does it?
Mm-hmm. Technically speaking.
Sorry?
Technically speaking.
Technically speaking, but in normal parlance, not. Is that what you're saying?
No. Yeah.
Yeah, no. Okay, I got that, yes. What did you think?
Yes.
Yes?
Yeah.
Well, that freedom of speech means the right to offend. Yes?
Yeah.
Yes, you're on that question too, aren't you? Yes, you've done that, haven't you? Okay, we're moving to the next one. Should we have trigger alerts?
That wasn't us. Nobody got asked that.
No one got asked that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We'll have to come back to that. I was going to ask that, but I just thought you might be
What's
too upset.
Your answer,
No. I thought you might be too upset, so I didn't want to tell you. So, what's the difference between blasphemy laws and cancel culture?
We said that blasphemy laws and cancel culture, one is often legislated blasphemy laws, but and cancel culture isn't. But often blasphemy laws are the object of what's the issue is blasphemy is against God, but cancel culture is against you've done something wrong to people.
Excuse me, yes? Up there?
Some kind of similar thoughts, but blasphemy laws often incur a legal, civil persecution, whereas cancel culture depends on the social group rejecting a person for saying certain things.
Yeah, I agree and disagree with you both on that. That is, yes, there are blasphemy laws still in Australia, but they're hardly ever applied. But they actually are cancel culture too. So there have been several people who have tried to come to Australia to speak who have been stopped by the government. Not by social pressure, but you know, there was a Holocaust denier who wanted to come and give lectures in Australia, and the Australian government stopped him. So it does also come from governmental forms. It also comes from institutional forms. So Sydney University wouldn't allow Mr. Isink to come and explain, Professor Isink, and explain why there are racial differences in intelligence. That was back in the 70s. Now, do I believe there's racial differences in intelligence? No, there's gender difference. Men are stupid, but I don't think there's racial differences. However, how do I know if the expert in intelligence is not allowed to tell me the evidence? Could be, couldn't it? As long as you're cancelling the information, I can't know that the information I have is right. But he was cancelled, but that's by the institution. The government also has cancelled people. Do I believe there was a Holocaust? Yes, I do. Right? But if the men who have got evidence that it didn't happen aren't allowed to speak, can I be as certain? Yeah, I am. Go on. What about this last one? What's the problem with having a compulsory education curriculum?
Well, it says what you can and can't teach.
Well, yes, you've just explained what a compulsory education curriculum is, but you haven't actually told me what's wrong with it, what the problem is.
It limits your freedom what you can teach.
It
limits your freedom.
Limits of your freedom what you can preach. What did you think it was?
It means that somebody chooses everyone's truth, and it promotes the voice of the people in power who choose the curriculum over other perspectives and voices.
Very powerfully and very politically incorrectly said. It was politically correct. Just, you slipped there for a moment. It controls everybody's truth.
Mm.
So there isn't a truth, there's just our truth.
The truth that people are raised to believe, yeah.
That's not truth, that's just...
No. What they think.
What they think. So it controls what people think.
Yeah.
But not the truth.
No.
Because people don't think the truth.
Well, you can't change it. Well, you can change the truth. But it's not necessarily...
Yes, you're right. Yes, I'm agreeing with you. I'm just toying. Yes? Ditto. You always get those intelligent groups that have a ditto. Yes, good. It is the same thing, isn't it? That is, compulsory educational curriculum is censorship in reverse. You must know this. Who says you must know this? On what basis must you know this? And if you must know this because of governmental edict, how do you know it's true? See, it's called propaganda. It's very interesting, the Russian people at the moment, they have a completely different view of what's taking place in the Ukraine because they've been only told one side. Hang on, I've only been told one side also. Maybe the Russian side's the right side. How do I know the Russian side's not the right side if I'm never told what it is? I'm in the same position that they're in reverse, isn't it? Once you have compulsory education, you actually have censorship. And our government's been doing it for the last umpteen years. These are the things you must know in order to have a certificate which says you've been properly educated at school. That's a problem. That's a very big problem, really. It's just censorship in reverse. Should we have trigger alerts? Well, maybe. You see, the problem with the freedom of speech and the right to offend is that people are offended and hurt, and in some ways you should warn them that it's going to happen. Tomorrow morning, first thing, I'm preaching here in chapel, and so I'm leaving very early tonight. I'm leaving as soon as, right, because I've got to be 9 o'clock in the morning preaching on Psalm 137. Psalm 137's got that terrible verse, happy is the one who bashes the baby's heads against the rocks. You know that verse? That's the verse I'm preaching on tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. You come, bring your babies, all families welcome. Now, I want to show some photos of wartime. I want to show photos of what they're doing in the Ukraine. I want to show photos of what we did in Vietnam. I want to show photos. But the photos are so overwhelmingly powerful that people may not be able to hear the talk, and furthermore, they may be so deeply traumatized by seeing it that they be doing great damage to them. So before putting the photos up, I should warn people. You know, if you've got a sensitive soul, shut your eyes now. Don't look this way. But on the other hand, the very reason for showing those photos is to stop people in the comfort of living in Sydney suburbia without any knowledge of what it's like to live in a city that's being bombed out of existence like in Syria, or gassed, or destroyed like with Agent Orange. I mean, how can you make judgments without knowledge? How will you have the knowledge if what you only ever see is sanitized knowledge? It's a hard question to answer whether you should have trigger alerts, isn't it? But you're right. Freedom of speech means the right to offend. Although that is not what is being said at the moment in our society, because people are afraid of hate speech. And they're not allowed to have hate speech. You know, I mean, it's a dreadful thing, you know, to be saying that anybody who wears a white t-shirt who stands over 6 foot should be rejected from this group. Right? That's so full of hate for one person. That's a bad thing to do. But what if it's true? You know, white shirts are offensive, t-shirts, and tall men should be excluded. I thought so. We could do a quick vote here, couldn't we? That's democratic, isn't it? Okay, here we go with these kinds of things. Well, let's turn to the Bible for a moment or two, shall we? And here goes a few things about the Bible. The first thing, and I'm not going to demonstrate it much from the Old Testament, is that truth in the Old Testament signifies faithfulness, reliability, and is a moral attribute. People are truthful. And what's important is that you can rely upon me because what I say is reliable, because it is truthful. I don't know truth in any abstract, absolute sense. I know truth only in a relational, personal sense. God is truthful, so you can rely upon him. In fact, he is the one from whom all truthfulness exists. So there's a word or two words in the Hebrew, emeth and emunah. Sometimes they're translated truth, sometimes they're translated faith. Because it's just the context as to where you're trying to find it, but it's the same word. In the New Testament, there's two words, you see. One, pistis, which gives you the continuing idea of faithfulness. One, aletheia, which gives you the concept more of truth, but truth is reliability. Reliable statements are truth. You can take this to the bank, is an old expression, right? That is, this is something that you can rely upon, you can trust, you can depend upon this, right? I gave you some reliable information. Women's toilets at the top of the stairs, men's toilets at the bottom of the stairs. That's reliable information. You can rely upon it, you can trust it. You don't even have to look at the signs. It's there, it's true. So, in one dictionary of theology, I didn't look at many, this is what it says. A true statement is not just accurate, eliciting a detached kind of assent, it's reliable, worthy of personal commitment and trust. And so there are two little words in the Hebrew that often go together, emeth and chesed, and they both have two kinds of sets of meanings, which we want to differentiate. They don't differentiate. It's truth and love, or it's faithful and grace. Grace and love are the same thing. Truth and faithful are the same thing in Hebrew's way of thinking. And that's carried through into the New Testament, where not only is God full of grace and truth, love and faithfulness, but Jesus. When we see Jesus in his glory, we see in John 1:14, grace and truth. Right? That's the character of God. Totally reliable and gracious, loving, merciful. Same word again is for mercy. Now, I'm going to look at a lot of verses. You're going to look them up, you're going to read them. Get your Bibles out or your phones, however it is you read them, because I need you to be reading for me, otherwise my voice just keeps going. Here we go. Are you ready? Can you find Psalm 15:2, Psalm 25:5, Psalm 43:3, Psalm 51:6, Psalm 86:11. And over here, we go Isaiah 45, verse 19, and Isaiah 59. Can you do this for Laura for us? Verses 14 and 15. Two verses. You can hope for that? Good, good. And Isaiah 65, 16, and that'll do us. Can't trust you, fellas. That's all right. Okay, away we go with these. Call the verse number out as you read it, loud voice, and because remember, I've got a microphone, so I'm doing better than you, so you need a loud voice, and give us the verse number as well.
Psalm 15, verse 2. He who walks blamelessly and does what is right and speaks truth in his heart.
Speaks truth in his heart is the person who does right. See, truth is a moral thing of the person, A truthful person speaks truth, does what is right. Yes?
Psalm 25, verse 5. Guide me in your truth and teach me, for you are God my Saviour, and my hope is in you all day long.
Guide me in your truth. God has a truth. Your truth is truth that I would trust rather than my truth. Or frankly, your truth. This is God has truth, yes? Psalm 43?
Psalm 43:3. Send me your light and your faithful care. Let them lead me. Let them bring me to your holy mountain, to the place where you dwell.
Excellent, Ryan. You've created exactly the problem I wanted. You're using the NIV. Yes?
Yeah.
That's good. You see, he said, send me your light and your faithfulness. The ESV says, send me your light and your truth. Here, same Hebrew words. One translator takes it as faithful, another takes it as truth, because that's the meaning. Yes? Well done, Ryan. For the wrong reason.
Psalm 51:6. Behold, you delight in truth in the inward being, and you teach your wisdom in the secret heart.
See, truthfulness in yourself, it's a character of your disposition that is really valuable. Yes, please go on for where are we? Psalm 86, verse 11.
Psalm 86, 11. Teach me your way, O Lord, that I may walk in your truth. Unite my heart to fear your name.
Right, again, your truth, God's way. Yes, please, Christine.
Isaiah 45, verse 19. I did not speak in secret in a land of darkness. I did not say to the offspring of Jacob, seek me in vain. I, the Lord, speak the truth. I declare what is right.
That is, the character of God is speak the truth, declare what is right. The two things, a Hebrew parallelism is a very way, great way of expressing something. It says the same thing in two different words, but it's meaning the same. To declare what is right is to speak the truth. It's that which is trustworthy, as we go down to Isaiah 59, 14 and 15. You see, do away with truth and you do away with justice. Have truth, you'll have righteousness and justice. Truth is a moral activity, not just an intellectual abstraction. Yes, the next one is down in Isaiah 65.
Verse 16. So that he who blesses himself in the land shall bless himself by the God of truth, and he who takes an oath in the land shall swear by the God of truth, because the former troubles are forgotten.
The God of truth. Truth comes from God. It is a personal thing. Now, this is what moderns, and I'll explain why in a moment, find difficult to grasp. The truth is personal. It's a personal character. It's something that you can rely on because it is someone you can rely on. Because the person of truthful character will speak truth. Because that is the character of the person. And we're all sinners, so we don't. That's one of the problems. I said in my heart, all men are liars, says the psalmist. Because we all are. That's a characteristic of our sinfulness. But a characteristic of God is that he only speaks the truth because he is the God of truth. His truth is the truth because it is of him himself. Okay. That being the case, turn with me to John 14:6. Who can recite this for me?
I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me.
Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. You see the personal nature of truth? Jesus himself is the truth. Okay, God is the truth. Jesus is the truth. Who else is the truth? Have a guess. The Spirit, well done. So thoughtful. You got it so quickly. Now, who can tell me where we know the Spirit is the truth? Sorry?
John 16?
John 16, I think you'll find it there, yes. When Jesus sends the truth to the Spirit to the disciples, he describes him as the Spirit of truth. When the Spirit of truth comes to you, sometimes you call the Holy Spirit, he's always called the Paraclete, but he's called the Spirit of truth. Truth is fundamental to the character of God, Father, Son, and Spirit. That's where truth is ultimately to be found. For us, it's in the person of Jesus in particular, who is the truth. That is who he is. Okay, what is the opposite of truth? We said earlier?
Not truth.
Not truth, yeah. But truth is personal, so what's the opposite of truth?
The devil.
The devil. Come with me to John chapter 8. John chapter 8. Oh, Luke, Acts, Luke. It's in there between them. There. Good. John 8. Verse 31, so Jesus said to the Jews who had believed in him, if you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. What's the truth? His word, because he is the truth. And they answered him, we're Abraham's offspring, and we've never been slave to anybody. How did you say you will become free? Jesus answered, truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who commits sin is a slave to sin. The slave doesn't remain in the house forever. The son remains forever. So if the son sets you free, you'll be free indeed. I know that you're offspring of Abraham, yet you seek to kill me because my word finds no place in you. I speak of what I have seen with my father, and you do what you have heard from your father. Now, what is their enslavement? Jesus speaks the truth that will set them free. They say, well, we're not slaves. And they say, yes, you are slaves. Slaves of what? Verse 39, they answered him, Abraham is our father. Jesus said to them, if you were Abraham's children, you'd be doing the works of Abraham did. But now you seek to kill me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. This is not what Abraham did. You're doing the works of your father did. And they said to him, we were not born in sexual immorality. We have one father, even God. Jesus said to them, if God were your father, you'd love me. For I come from God and I'm here. I came not my own accord, but he sent me. Why do you not understand what I say? It's because you cannot bear to hear my word. You are of your father, the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning, and he has nothing to do with the truth, because there's no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies. But because I tell you the truth, you don't believe me. Which one of you convicts me of sin? I tell you the truth. Why do you not believe me? Whoever is of God hears the words of God, and the reason why you do not hear them is that you are not of God. You see, God is truth and speaks the truth. His Son is truth and speaks the truth. If you listen to his words, you'll be freed from the liar who you're actually believing. The devil's power is telling lies. I don't know what you think about the devil, but you know, if you've got an image of the devil as opera cope and horns and pitchfork, grow up. The devil's picture is lying. That's it. And his power is given to you by him when you believe his lies. He has no power in himself. But every time you believe his lies, you are giving him the power over you. And it's an enslaving power as well. And so only Jesus will set you free from Satan and his lies. That's where it's at. It's going to come across to Romans 1:18, which we've done almost every second week, Romans 1:18. Romans 1:18. Hang in there, folks. Coming up the home straight. To explain what it's all about, here we go, Romans 18, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God's shown it to them, for his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power, divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since creation of the world in the things that have been made, so they're without excuse. For although they knew God, they didn't honour him as God or give thanks to him, became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man, birds, animals, creeping things. Therefore God gave them up in the lust of their hearts to impurity, dishonouring their bodies amongst themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie. And worshipped and served the creature rather than the creator who's blessed forever. The great trick of Satan back in the Garden of Eden was to tell Adam and Eve lies about God and about the fruit. and you eat that, you will not die. And she saw it and it was good. It was a lovely piece of fruit. And she ate that which was death itself. All he did was tell the lie. That's all he has to do. And we give him the power over our lives. Once you depart from truth and move into lies, everything is built on that is a lie. See, I've dealt with couples who have gone through a terrible adultery and divorce often. It's fascinating. The sex involved almost doesn't matter to them. It's all the lies that go around the affair. That's what really bugs them. Everything I've believed about where you were for the last 2 weeks or last 2 months or last 3 years actually was a lie. I don't know where you were. And you told me you were doing this and you weren't doing that. And you said you were this and you weren't. And you said the money was in the bank, but it actually wasn't in the bank because you'd spent it on. And I don't know what I believe anymore. And the devastating effect of adultery is the lies. That's what really destroys people. It's so sad. So very sad. I mean, the sex, yeah. But that's the sex doesn't bug them as much as the lies bugs them. That's the bit they find impossible. Because you've got to rewire all the images of the last, you know, X years and rethink every conversation and every outing to actually get back in touch with what actually happens. It's a terrible thing because truth is like that. And what happens is we become fools and we build a life that's just wrong. Now, here is the damage we do. When we reject God, we now live the life of lies. Isn't it fascinating? There's not a person in this room who has, double negative, every person in this room has told lies, haven't we? A human phenomenon that hardly any religion, philosophy, ever analyzes. Why is it that all humans tell lies, even though all humans pretty well say lying is bad, and everybody hates being lied to? Yet we all do it. The Bible explains that because we've adopted that great false god, Satan. And so instead of having the character of God, truthfulness in the heart, we have the character of Satan, deceitfulness in the heart. But it's a relational thing that you need to grasp hold of. Of course, you can reach the stage of John 18, where the truth meets up with the postmodern. John 18. Verse 36. Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might be delivered over to the Jews." Not delivered over to the Jews. "But my kingdom is not from the world." Then Pilate said to him, "So you are a king?" Jesus answered, "You say that I'm a king. For this purpose I was born. For this purpose I've come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" See, face to face with the reality of truth and lies, you go for the big lie. Yeah, there is no such thing as truth. Truth, that's your truth, my truth, everybody's got their own truth. You're confusing truth with knowledge. There is truth. I may not know it, but there is truth. To say it's my truth and that's your truth is actually use the word truth when you mean knowledge. This is what I know, this is what you know. Knowledge is not the same as truth. My knowledge of the truth is always temporary because tomorrow I might find out something else that will change my mind or my knowledge. Hey, truth and knowledge, you've got to get clear about truth and knowledge because it's all postmodernism. What's it about? Well, when people pulled the plug on God in the late 18th century in the area called the Enlightenment, which created modern society and modern thinking. They pulled the plug on God, not realizing that the water was going to carry the baby down the plug hole, because all kinds of things have actually given in. The Enlightenment, you see, truth is usually defined as the correspondence of an idea to an object, a positive correlation between a proposition and a state of affairs to which it refers. The Enlightenment therefore brought quasi-scientific expectation for precision and proof of all questions of knowledge and truth. There was this hope, this aspiration. And remember, it was the age of the machine, so people were seeing. It's like the age of the computers changed the way we've talked. You know, I'm going to download this information. What does it mean, download this information? I'm going to read it. I'm going to learn. I'm going to think. But no, we just download now. You see, well, the age of machine was like that. You see, it had an absolutism about it. And they thought all knowledge could be certain, could be absolute. We will know the truth. But they forgot, of course, a whole range of things. So people developed it differently. Hegel, for example, was an idealist who said it's important that everything be coherent. Everything's got to fit together to be the truth, which gives you problems with light, whether it's waves or particles. How can that be coherent? I mean, there's all kinds of freedom and determinism. How can they be coherent? But the idealist hope was that it would all be coherent. But the objective reality that the Enlightenment hoped has turned out to be not right. And in the 20th and now 21st century, postmodernism has risen. And it's not concerned about objective reality, it's concerned about personal reality. Instead of looking outside to the world, I look inside to myself. And so you're not talking about the truth, you're talking about my truth. It's all about me now. They would point out that the Enlightenment truth is really just power speech. It's what powerful people in universities, in governments use to control other people. Science. We've seen it in the pandemic. All the way through the pandemic, the government had a scientist standing next to them, and he's saying, we're following the science, and the science tells us, you remember what it told us? It told us that it was not spread in the air. It was only spread from surfaces, so we had to wash our hands and we needn't bother with masks. And then a little while later, they discovered it was spread by air, and so suddenly the scientists were standing beside them and the government said, we're following the science, put your mask on. And so I don't mind science changing its mind. That's the beauty of science, that it does. New evidence gives new argument. But absolutism in truth is a problem. Inductive reasoning can never give you absolute truth. Only maths can give you absolute truth. And chess, or Go if you're Chinese, right? That's the only place of absolute truth. Induction, you never know. Tomorrow we might discover something else. The day after, something else. We don't ever know. But the hope was we would. It's uncertain. But power people use it as if it is certain. It's also immoral. I mean, the classic is the atom bomb. You know, no one now wants to have that kind of... But it's very good science. It's brilliant science. I went to a... France, I went to a German concentration camp where the German doctors did experimentation on humans. Really disgusting. Really, really seriously stomach-turning stuff. All through the magazine, it kept on saying that this was phony science, phony science. So when I went home, I looked up these people. There was nothing phony about them. They were full professors at full universities with all the qualifications under the sun. They just did really nasty things to people. Some of which we use today because we found out what happens if you boil people or freeze people or other things, you see, we now know. But they did it. It was science, but terribly immoral. And it's used to establish and preserve people, see? But so the postmoderns are saying, well, look, all knowledge is relative. And the language used to describe things, well, we just got to deconstruct it, because the person who's speaking is a power merchant. What's he saying to preserve his power? How is he using his speech to put himself into positions of authority and power and greatness? And so we're not actually interested in the speech itself anymore. I had a teacher tell me the other day that in his class, he said, what you're going to do with this piece of literature, the first thing you're going to do is underline the verbs. Hand went up from a particular student. What's a verb? Now, that's all right, until you discover that it's a second year arts student at the University of, where arts is greatly honoured. This person has got through the HSC in English. This person has got through first year university in the arts faculty. And now they're in the second year university and they still don't know what a verb is. How could that be? How could you pass through such educational standards and not know? I'm just a little embarrassed here because I have a suspicion there's a couple of you not too certain about a verb either. How could you? Well, that's because the curriculum of New South Wales education system no longer insists on grammar. Grammar is the analysis of language. Grammar is the philosophy of logic. Grammar is the enlightenment understanding of words having meaning. Words don't have meaning. Powerful people use words to bring about their causes. So we don't need to learn grammar anymore. We don't need to learn the difference in a verb, an adjective, an adverb, or a participial clause, or any of that kind of logic. That's not necessary now. As this teacher told me, the whole world can be summed up in two words. Yum, yuck. Huh? That's what it's about, you see. What I like, yum. What I don't like, yuck. Huh? It's all about what I like, don't like. That's what it all is. That's my reaction. And so my identification is the truth. I identify as a 10-foot gorilla. Don't you tell me I'm not.
I
am.
Are you
on? Right. And one of the best looking gorillas that's been around for a long time too, I may say, right? I mean, if I identify it, it's my truth. And it's yum for me, yuck for you, that's your problem. Right? You've got your truth, I've got my truth. Now, the postmoderns are right. The Enlightenment modernity world claimed to have objective truth without God, and so depersonalized truth into just abstract ideas which you can hardly define. So you wind up with these kind of dictionary definitions that just go round and round. Truth is the quality of being true, which is in accordance with fact and reality, which is what true is, you see? And you just go round and round and round. They have to include number three because there are still old-fashioned Christians in this world. There are still people who are hanging on to the old language of truth has got to do with loyalty and faithfulness and relationships and person. But in a few years, that will get dropped out of the dictionary as well, because, or it'll get put as archaic, yes, little word, archaic, stuck there. No one actually, it's like the word gay. Who uses the word gay to mean gaiety now? It's archaic, you see. Same thing's going to happen with inclusive. It'll be archaic to think that you actually mean bringing everybody in. That's, you know, that's not what's meant. If they wanted to have an inclusive football round, you know what they do? Everybody wears the team colours, and up in the corner, you choose whatever logo you want to put. You can put the rainbow colour up there, you can put the Muslim crescent up there, you can put Coca-Cola up there if you want to, you can just put I Love Philip Jensen up there, whatever you want to put up there, you just put up there, you see. Now that would be inclusive, wouldn't it? Because everybody could be in. That's not what they mean by inclusive. They mean gay pride. That's inclusive. That's what they mean. Well, that's all right. It's just the language is shifting and changing in one direction nearly always. So do you see the problem? We Christians are pre-modern. We're not modernist and we're not post-modern. We don't believe truth is objective information out there. We believe truth is personal. And so we criticize the Enlightenment. But at the same time, we don't believe truth is just all relative and inside yourself. Not just true because I believe it, because I believe lies. I mean, that's just not truth either. So we reject both modernism and postmodernism. We accept both, because truth is objective. It's in the person of God. And we accept that the critique of the way people use language, yes, they do. I laugh at Mr. Trump. I think it's very funny, because the journalists hated him for speaking in the language of the journalists. That was the problem. He knew their game. And so he would say whatever the crowd wanted to hear to get him elected, which is exactly the game that you've been taught if you've done English 1 at any university in the Western world in the last 50 years. Truth, the language is not meaningful. The language is the way powerful people get what they want. Well, that's what he did. Very irritating if you believe in truth.